Foden Beat Show, a weekly podcast about the 2024 Star Wars Armada Vassal World Cup. Thanks for joining us.
Hello and welcome to episode 6 of the...
What?
Where did 6 come from? Hello and welcome to episode 8 of the Foden Beat Show. Yes, episode 8. Tonight I am joined by my regular co-host, Armchair Jedi.
Hello there.
Also guesting with us again, we have asked Stewbucket to come back and join us again. Welcome, Stewbucket.
Hey, happy to be back.
Glad to have you. Tonight is going to be a bit of a weird episode, and I got to tell you, so Armchair has been sick all weekend. It sounds like he doesn't sound good. He's got some cough going on and a bit of a stuffy nose thing.
He's on mute,
so he can't disagree with me. And he was like, we don't have a topic. We don't have a plan. We can't possibly record. And I was like, damn the torpedoes. No, wait, that's the wrong franchise. And I said, let's invite Stu on because he can talk, and we'll do a little recap of what happened in the last week. And then we'll just kind of shoot the shit, maybe talk with Stu about how the event went, maybe talk about some podcast stuff, and then next week we'll do a full-on discussion of the finals and try to get the winner of the finals on, and then that'll be it for the Foden Beat for this year.
They'll put us back in a box and shove us in the attic.
Yeah, and then we get to enjoy our podcast millions, like Fox has been telling us this whole time.
Yeah. Have you gotten a check yet?
No check. No.
Okay, I'll ask what's going on with that.
Great. Thank you. With that, we're going to start off with the recap, because I think the recap is going to cause us to have things to want to talk about. So, Armchair, take it away.
All right. Yeah, we're totally going in this planless. We're upending the normal flow of things. We're going to start with the recap, and here it is. This is the finals, folks. This is the what we've been waiting for and playing for the past, oh my goodness, 3 months almost. VWC is a marathon. It's a heck of a tournament. I love it. But unfortunately, there can only be 4 in the finals. And those 4 were Arcwelder, Maki, Truthiness, and Garrett. Maki was kind enough to schedule a lot of his games early on. Arcwelder got all of his done early on. So we've got quite a few results already on the books, but nothing decided yet. So let's go through them real quick. First off, on game 1 was Maki versus Arcwelder, and this is a super close one, 14 MOV, 98-84 in Maki's favor, giving him the early 6-5 lead in the finals. Next day, Maki plays Truthiness, a bit of a bigger swing this time, but still 200-110, only a 90-point victory, 7-4 to Maki. Maki starting to put himself in a good position here to be in a dominant position with all these games still to play, you know, kind of setting the pace, setting the mark up high. Next, we had Arcwelder and Garrett. Again, a close game, 174-103 for Arcwelder. Kind of keeping pace with Maki there. Only a 71-point MOV differential, so, you know, it gets that 7-4, but not... You know, nobody's really kind of jumping out here. Next game, Arcwelder's last game against Truthiness. And this is where the scores start coming out, because Arcwelder got a big 247-70 victory over Truthiness. So that gives Arcwelder 20 points and puts him into the lead. Maki's got one game to go against Garrett, and Garrett's got a game to go against Truthy. Now, at this point, looking at the... at the scores, Maki's on 13 points, Arcwelder's on 20 points, and given MOV, if Maki gets a 7-point win over Garrett in Maki's last game, Maki will seal the deal and win the whole shebang. And in his last game against Garrett, Maki unfortunately goes down 249-232, taking a 5-6 loss. And so that puts him on 18 points to Arcwelder's 20, and done. So Maki can finish no higher than second, unfortunately. there's one game left to play, and that is the game between Garrett and Truthiness. Now, the mark right now is Arc Welder. He's at 20 points, tournament points. He's at 248 MOV. Garrett has got 10 tournament points and 17 MOV. So he can, with a 10-1, overtake Arc Welder and win the whole thing. I mean, against a player of the caliber of Truthiness, that's a really long shot, but I've been a Canucks fan for 20 odd years, so I'll believe in anything at this point. So we are waiting for that one last game to play. I think it's scheduled for next weekend. And yeah, that'll be the last game of the Vassal World Cup, and I think we're all excited to see how it goes down. And I mean, regardless of what happens and regardless of what the result ends up being, I think it's safe to say that everybody, not only these four, which are, I mean, you know, we all know these players, they're fantastic players, but everybody from the pods all the way through to now, I think, you know, there's been so many great games, so many neat plays, neat fleets, memorable events. It's been so much fun to cover, and I'm looking forward to the end of it, but I'm also kind of dreading the end of it. And with that in mind, I mean, that's kind of why we asked Stu Bucket to be on, so we can kind of talk about it from the organization kind of perspective, how it's felt. You know, I think this is the first time you've helped run the World Cup, right?
This is my second time.
Second time, right.
Helping run stuff. But man, you were right. We have just had some awesome, awesome players, some incredible games. Part of the reason I got into helping run this early on was because I just love to spectate. And I remember the first Vassal World Cup I watched with multiple windows open while pretending like I'm studying. And I've been able to do that again this year. And so many little brilliant plays that if one were to try and be a student of the game, this is where you'd start, because really talented players who just know what they're doing and know how to leverage tough situations. I don't know how many of those last games of the Final Four you guys have watched, but the delicate squad play, the precise maneuvering. I watched this brilliant play from Garrett in the first round. Who was he playing? I don't remember who he was playing. But he cranked this turn with his quasar and rammed himself, and anybody watching would have thought, well, that was just silly. Like, why would you ram yourself turn one, cranking a JJ turn when you didn't have to? And he was setting himself up to swing his quasar wide to screen himself for the rest of the game and not get stuck in a place where he didn't want to be. It was truly brilliant, and nobody could have seen it except for him at the beginning. And you just get a billion little of those little plays to watch as you follow these games. So that's been a really incredible experience. What awesome players we've got.
I think it's fun that you said like you loved watching and then you ended up playing in both the Second Chance and the Swiss.
Yeah. I've had some time on my hands.
good. Thanks.
And I had two fleets that I wanted to run. I was not planning on entering the Second Chance, but I was really hoping the Second Chance could avoid having any buys, because that one's just for fun to whip out whatever people have in the jank drawer. And the Second Chance also had great plays and great players and things that I never thought I would see. I could talk more about other games, but I know we're trying to do a retrospective on the whole thing and not just Stu's spectating experiences.
Well, no, I think that's part of it, right? I mean, it's just kind of looking back at the whole thing and seeing. I mean, as an organizer, I don't know. When you're watching games that are happening in the tournament that you're helping to run, you know, is there anything kind of going through your head differently than you might if you were just like a participant or a casual observer?
You know, the big thing that was on my mind watching, I was privileged enough to play in one of these high leverage games, because I lost to Arc Welder in the last round of the Swiss. I had a decent chance to get into the Final Four, but he played a great game. But so with that game in mind and watching the games that I watched in the Final Four from the perspective of organizing. You know, we decided to run this Final Four not as elimination that has been done in the past, rather as this round robin format, letting the players schedule it like it's their own pod, right? And watching them play, these fellows are playing not just to win the game. They're playing to win, as everyone does in competitive armadas, everyone does in casual armada. Like, they're playing to win, but it's clear they're playing to not just win. Like, you watch and they're laying traps and they're trying to leverage. They're trying to see, okay, how far can I push my luck? How big of a win can I make this without shooting myself in the foot? And that really, I think, is the beauty of the Armada tournament scoring system. The fact that we incentivize not just a win, but a win that is, how far can I push my limited resources before a win turns into a disaster? And watching these games, I really got this feeling of, oh, these guys are not playing simply to pull out the W. They're playing to get as large of a win as they can reasonably expect under the circumstances, which makes for a really compelling game. It makes for a really compelling pod, and it makes for some really, really brilliant plays. I didn't see anybody thinking, I'll just run and snipe a squad round six. I saw a lot of cagey cat and mouse. How can I get him to be the agent of his own destruction, which made for some really, really great games. So from an organizing perspective, I think that the Final Four as a round robin was a huge success because I got to see the kind of armada that I really like to see.
I think it's interesting too, because forgive me if I'm wrong, but like, they're all squad fleets.
Yeah. I don't know if they're all exactly 130 and above, but they're all pretty high up there.
Yeah. And I saw a couple people talking about like hour and a half games, and it seems like not only are they having these, like, what you're describing as cagey, like, really chess-like matches, but they're also doing it damn fast.
Maki played all of his games in under 90 minutes, I think. His is not an easy fleet to fly. Nobody's is an easy fleet to fly, but they're experienced enough. They know how to be prepared for things that that really they're kind of running into this and not worrying about the silly stuff, but playing the same armada that they've played over the Swiss and in their own pod phases, which I think helps it to continue to go fast.
Yeah, the lowest squad total is 130 points, and that was Maki's. Truthy has got 11 squads.
Just to make sure he gets the fullest nectar out of it.
Absolutely.
I know Truthy's a little bored with his list, but I have loved watching him fly it. It is a fun one.
All right, so Stu, is there anything that you look at this event, we've done the almost all the way to the end, is there anything that you would change or that you would want to see change between how it was run this year, how it's been run previous years, you know, that maybe you do differently next time?
You know, that's an interesting question, especially because I've had a lot of fun helping to run this, but I still consider myself, you know, a helper. This is Biggs and GP's baby. And so I don't want to overstep my bounds here as far as what kind of changes I can suggest we enact. The two things on my mind the most are, because, you know, like Armchair, I really love some good data. And so I would next year, I think, encourage some better collection of, and maybe even make it mandatory, of objectives that are played, objectives that are flipped. Because I know that players just really hanker for some of this information because we're just curious and we want to know. And I think there's a way to do that while still preserving the competitive integrity of the event and then eventually making that data available for people to see what gets run at the highest levels by players all throughout the world. That's the fun part about the data from this event, is the fact that, you know, Worlds is skewed towards those who can get there, but anybody can play in the Vassal World Cup. And so you get to see any old list and any old crazy list. So The other thing, and I wanted to get some feedback. Actually, I guess we can talk about the data.
I want to pause there for a sec, because you reminded me that like a year ago. Actually, I'm going to back up a sec. So I think it's Valadian in the TTS mod has like a reporter within the TTS mod. So you can report how many points you got and the objectives played and these kinds of things. So it was about a year or so ago, I set out to make something similar in Vassal. And I got most of the way through, and I put it out to the community and said, hey, Green Knight, here it is. See what you want to do with it. And then I lost all interest, and you know that's the death of an open source project. But it reminded me of that, as far as you know, data collection and how to get the data out of people's hands in a way that's going to make sure that they're prepared to give it. Because one of the problems is you can have a survey all you want, but if nobody wants to click it after they're done, then you're not getting any data out of them.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, I can't remember if it was the last one the year before, but I had more free time and I was watching the games fairly diligently. And so I was able to kind of collect some of the objective data just from like watching the game and seeing what was chosen. Right. But at the same time, I'm like, God, should I really be like putting this, you know, releasing this into the wild, you know, before the tournament's over? Because, you know, you show up to a game and you show your opponent your objectives, and that, you know, that's open knowledge then for that game, but is it really there for open knowledge for everybody? Is it, you know, there's a level of sort of fairness in that level of disclosure. So, I mean, from my kind of point of view, I guess, as long as there's some sort of consensus in the group or and in the organizing community that, okay, yeah, this is the data that we're going to collect. This is how it's going to be used and when it's going to be released. And whether that means that, okay, we're going to collect all the objectives that were played, but not release it until, you know, after the event or after the Swiss or what have you, or if it means that that's going to be open knowledge as soon as it's submitted, you know, just something, because I think it's important that like you said, the players know what's being collected when and for what purpose.
Totally.
But also that it gets fully collected, because it's hard to kind of, I mean, I don't know, I guess it's easy to kind of pull information and get ideas and stuff from incomplete information, incomplete data. But I'm a completionist, so it drives me nuts. I'm still refreshing the Swiss Longshanks, hoping those three games will get played so I can finish my spreadsheet. Please play your games.
I'm curious if those are going to get played. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what the right move is. I just know that, people find it incredibly valuable, and I think we're all in this mindset of, if we can provide something useful to the community, we want to do it. That's been my whole motive in helping to run these things, is how can we create a fun, helpful, happy activity for everyone to engage in at the same time. You know, I the Vassal World Cup is its own World Cup, but I am aware that many of these players are using this for the World's Prep and Adepticon. And so in that sense, I want to provide this as an opportunity for them to test things out and learn about themselves and their lists as much as possible.
And the meta that they might be diving into.
The other thing, I wanted to bounce this off of you guys, maybe get a solicit feedback from anybody who's got ideas, is I really want to figure out a way to involve the community in the seeding process for the pods. We have past data that we rely on. We have knowledge of who players are and what they've played. We have survey results when they tell us who they are and where they win. But I don't know. I really want to get as many voices as is reasonable into the process of seeding the pods, just to continue to make it more fair, to make it more interesting. And I was curious if you guys had any ideas about that.
That's tough. I mean,
look, Stu, we give you the questions in advance. You got to do the same courtesy back.
You know, to be fair, not this time. So
not this time.
We are totally off script right now. No, that's a good question. Because it's tricky. I mean, I do appreciate that you take into account time zones and locality, both in terms of pod seating, just to get your time zone manageable, but also to try to, you know, not wind up playing your best bud all the time.
Yes, we definitely try to get diversity of local meta while getting uniformity of time zone, and that almost overrides the desire to have fair seating. Not quite, but it definitely is a part of the balance process.
Yeah, and it's important, but like you said, it's not the, like, if we're talking about seating, like competitive seating, like that's hard, because how do you go ahead and rank players? And I mean, I had a crazy idea at some point while I was feverish or something like that. And I started looking up, okay, well, how do you generate like an ELO ranking or something like that? How does chess do it? Or how does tennis do it? I remember when I first started getting interested in this data collection, I think it was Truthy that started the spreadsheet that I actually use. I could be wrong, and I could be remembering this wrong, and I apologize if I am, but I think it was Truthy. It was trying to figure out a way to rank players, just to kind of have some sort of metric like that. And trying to puzzle it through myself, I'm like, how would you even do that? Because there's just so many, it's not like a golf or a tennis situation, or even like an NCAA basketball or football situation where you have people that go to, there's a certain tour that you go to, and people, the same kind of group of people qualify for and compete in those tours. And so you can very easily kind of see the rankings that develop out of that. And you can easily assign points for them and stuff like that, where you might have a player like, like Truth, or you're like Maki or Large Package or someone like that, who maybe they only get to one world qualifier and then worlds, but they win their world qualifier and they place high in worlds. So like, you can't go off a point system like that, right? So it's, yeah, I think my short answer is I don't know.
You made me think of, so my stepmother is learning to play chess, and she's playing like a computer sort of thing, but she's got an ELO rating. Even though she's only playing this computer, she started probably at 1500, and then the computer has a certain ranking based on the difficulty she's chosen, and she's going up or down based on that. So I wonder if there's a distributed system of some kind that, I mean, you kind of said that there's, one of the challenges of Armada is that there's not a solid group that is kind of doing these tours. But I wonder if, like I just said it, like a distributed system where it's like you can get ELO points independent of playing with the same people time and time again.
I mean, you said robot. I was just going to suggest that we use the known Vassal AI, just Sam Simon, and just ping him, and you can play him and see how it goes.
And then rank everyone your Sam Simon rating.
Yes, I'm a Sam minus 100, but that, I feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, amazing. I think it's a great idea.
If I'm like Sam negative triple digits, I'm good.
There was another thought that I had. So Stu, you said you wanted to get the community more involved, and this is kind of a negative opinion rather than a, hey, you should do this. But as soon as you say that, I start thinking of like collaborative approaches to decision making. And then I was like, no, I don't think that's a good idea. Because for me, at least anecdotally, I really like that somebody else puts me into a position, and I don't have to make an assessment of my own skill level to put myself into that position. I get really awkward. Like I started playing roller derby recently, and they were like, okay, are you like a primary jammer or a backup jammer? And I was like, I don't know. I'm going to go talk to the people that know how I skate. They'll tell you how I am doing, because me assessing myself is really challenging.
You know, that is a great point. That is a great point. And when I say community input, I think that the biggest thing I mean is that the beauty of the Vassal World Cup is anybody signs up, but the hard part is that when seeding comes, there's maybe 20 names, 20 of our 88 names, where we're looking at them. We're like, we don't know who this person is. They left the slot blank. We want to give them a fair shake and a fair seed and not put them in some sort of death pod. And yet we don't have an ability to stick them in there. Maybe us just talking about the fact that a seeding exists creates an incentive for people to be more honest with us about maybe not how good they are, but at least where they play and who they play and if they've placed at a tournament. But yeah, that's a great point. I'm totally with you. If someone asked me to evaluate my own skill level, I definitely would not be able to do so.
No, especially way. Too, like if depending on where you play, how often you play, like, it's like, oh yeah, no, I play with Sam every day and I do okay. Is way different than, you know, me and Rayleigh having our LOL games every week, right? It's a different metric.
I've probably told this story on the podcast before, but I used to play when I was a teenager. I played my brother at chess all the time, and I thought I was terrible. And then we went to a tournament together once, and I came in like third, and I was like, oh, that was a life lesson to me about that. Where you're like, you know, actually it reminds me too. He's Peter. At my old Warhammer gaming club used to say, you're only as good as your last opponent. And in that scenario, my last opponent was really damn good.
I love that.
There's an idea. Maybe add in some questions to your, like, I remember you guys had that question about, like, what tournaments have you played in? What positions, what placements did you have in there? But they could also be, like, who do you play regularly that we might know?
Right. That's fair. That's a great idea.
Yeah, because I remember, who was it? Oh, it was Red Scourge that plays Angry Ewok all the time. And it's exactly your scenario. You're like, I'm going to rank you differently than random podunk person who I've never heard of.
Yeah. Man, playing Angry Ewok all the time. That's a tough draw, man. Angry Ewok knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, part of the, I guess, benefit of all the time I've spent putting numbers into spreadsheets is that we've got some data now, going back a few years of players and how they've done in the World Cup anyway. So, I mean, when this World Cup wraps up, I'm going to post this spreadsheet so people can look through it and tear it apart and tell me where I've made formula mistakes and what data doesn't make sense so I can go fix it again. But, you know, there's that, and then there's the organized play spreadsheets that I've been working on this year. So there's going to be some historical data, I guess, there that's available in a format that might be useful for this kind of thing. Cause that data has kind of been around, whether it's been in, you know, in T3 when that was around and or T4 now, Longshanks or whatever, but it's not really in a digestible format for this kind of application, but hopefully with, you know, these ungodly huge spreadsheets I've made, that, you know, maybe that's a tool that could be useful too.
Beautiful.
If only you had like a SQL backed database with queryable.
It's on my list. It's on there. it's up there with exercise, eating healthy, and only doing two podcasts a week.
Is two your maximum?
I think one and a half is my maximum.
Yeah. That's the impression I was getting. Like, two seems like a lot for you.
Well, my last question for you two, and I'm going to spring this one on you again, is do you have any changes you want to see admin-wise for next year? Is there anything where you thought this could have been smoother, or this could have been more useful, or this could have been more fun?
There's one. And I don't want to throw anybody on the bus. So let's call them S2 bucket. Okay. No, that's too obvious. That's too obvious. Stuba T. Okay. No. Playing in your own tournament. That's totally cool. No, I mean, I think the round robin kind of format for the finals was a great way to do that. You know, I think part of the, and I appreciate that the seeding is, you know, on your mind and something that you're kind of aware of and are trying to find good solutions for, because I think that's probably the trickiest part. And I think also too, it's also like, there's just a lot more good players now. and
so many good players.
And it's just hard, you know. It's like you're going to wind up in those pods sometimes, and that's just kind of that. And there's not much you can do about it because it is, you know, time zone locked. And I can't remember. Did you have on the survey at the outset, was there was a question about where your time zone was, but was there like a time zone band question, or was the question phrased more like, what time zone are you more comfortable playing in versus what time zone are you in?
I don't remember how we phrased it. It definitely was not a band. We probably phrased it as, what time zone are you in? And then just assumed they'd be okay with that. But giving players a question of what time zone do you want to play in is a good question. As far as the band goes, we just assumed you'd be okay with plus or minus one.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and
I want to play in Hawaii time.
You can make that happen.
You could have. I played a game against LTD 1 year in Australia. Yeah. And it's tricky. Like, so Rayleigh and I are on the West Coast, and of course we can only go one direction
for
a chunk of time. So. And that puts an extra kind of, you know, that's a little bit harder for scheduling for people on this side.
I make all my opponents stay up late. It's my secret trick to losing all of my games.
And all of our guests.
Yeah, we're jerks.
Yeah.
Stu, I'm going to throw this question back at you in a sense in order to answer. Oh, you still have things you wanted to say?
I wasn't finished talking, yeah.
Oh.
But I'll let you finish in a second, okay?
Okay.
The other thing I was going to say was, and I don't know if there's an answer, but I'm going to ask the question is, what can be done about the number of drops? Because I feel like this year, you know, as the numbers grow, obviously the more chance of having people drop out is, you know, it's just kind of almost like a percentage of it. And it's, you know, at the end of the day, it's just kind of a funsies tournament. You know, it's not real life. It's not that important in the grand scheme of things. But you know, in this tournament in particular, we had one pod that lost half of its people. So yeah. I don't know. I know it's a problem for organizers, and I know I'm just wondering if you had any thoughts on that, or if there's anything that you think might be doable about that, or if that's just kind of the nature of the beast and you deal with it as best you can. And you guys did deal with it as best you could.
Yeah. Actually, my question is related to this. I'm going to interrupt. Oh. I'm going to give you an easier question than the one Armchair threw out there.
Oh yeah, perfect.
Assuming we know what happened in here. We had as far as I know, three drops nearly right off the hop. And you made a pretty quick snap decision, and nobody can fault you for that. But given what you know now, what do you think you would have done differently if you had have waited, or if you had have known that you were going to have those three drops? Like, if you made the pods, and then you're like, oh shit, I'm going to have three drops. What are you going to do now?
If we had known the number of drops that we were going to have, I think we would have consolidated pods and maybe made a pod of five. And the pod of five sucks because you let two people in, or you let three people in, more games to play. But with more drops, I think the pod consolidation is fast. And I think, man, it was so hard because they were so, the drops came slow enough that we couldn't consolidate pods, but they came fast enough that it felt like, oh, all of a sudden Sam and Thea are just playing one game each.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's part of why I didn't sign up to begin with. I was like, hey, you know, first drop, I'll throw myself in there and we can preserve our pod sizes. Cause I had a lot of liberality with my scheduling, and that's exactly what I did, but there were more drops after that. I think in hindsight, man, maybe I just wait 3, 4, 5 days and if we get enough drops that consolidating pods makes sense, we consolidate based on what games haven't been played yet. Because a lot of people take a couple of days to stutter start their games. And we don't need to be quite as quick as we were. And the same would go for injecting an alternate like myself or someone else who had offered perchance into that scenario. We're not doing so immediately, but waiting to look for the right opportune moment. I think, because like Armchair said, you know, drops are going to happen. They're frustrating. If we had an antidote for them, we'd be millionaires. So that's probably where I land, is just being a little more delaying on our decision to intervene.
I think you're overestimating how much money can be found in tournament organizing.
That makes sense. And, you know, given that, like, because of the sort of the pod format, nobody's sitting around waiting anyway. Like when my pod had our drop, I still had two games still to play. So it's not like it was impeding the flow of the event, as opposed to like when you're playing a one day tournament, a drop impedes the flow of the event. You have to do something about that now.
Yeah. Yeah. The same goes, I think, for accommodating delays in the Swiss phase. You know, the Swiss phase, we always say, is a week at a time, but it ends up taking more like 10 days. And then between the pods, the 10-day Swiss, the final four, you know, this tournament that we want to take 2 months ends up taking three. And it like Armchair said at the beginning, it becomes a marathon. And people get burned out. And I want people to have fun. You know, that's the whole goal in doing this.
So is it something that you'd consider putting in more stringent time requirements next year, or is that just something that you kind of take as the nature of the beast?
I hem and haw about that. I would have to talk to my compatriots to think what the right move is. I think there's a world to make it more strict. I think there's a world to say, hey, every game's important. One thing I've done with casual tournaments is to just put in a 6-5 placeholder and then say, hey, you guys are still on the hook for this game. And we'll just backdate it and let the Swiss reflect that accordingly, which can lead to weird submarining. I think it's functional. I don't know what the right move is. I think there's good arguments for all of them.
Yeah. I don't know if there is a right answer for that, honestly.
Well, or I mean, I think you said it a moment ago where it's like, okay, if you're currently planning on a 7-day round, maybe plan on a 10-day round and then be strict about it.
Yeah, that's fair.
That could be a perfectly reasonable option. You're like, there you go, guys. You got a week and a half, but don't mess around.
Yeah. We'll yeah, but I mean, I mean, then you balance that against the sort of burnout factor too. Yeah, I don't know. I certainly appreciate all the work that yourself, GP, Mercier, Biggs, everybody who's helped out over the years, and to be honest, everybody who's ever run a tournament, I'm very appreciative for the contributions that you guys make to the community, and especially in something this large.
I tell you what, it is a ton of fun. I've been really happy with what.
I mean, I can't imagine you'd keep coming back if it wasn't, but yeah, it's a ton of work. I'm really appreciative of everything that you guys do to make it happen. I know that, you know, you guys probably get a bit of burnout too, having to, you know, have this just be a thing that's still ticking along. But at the same time, it's like one of those things you love to do. So it's, you know, it's the pleasure and the pain, I suppose.
This is a good segue for something that I wanted to do that was probably good, better at the end. But here we are.
Okay.
Armchair has thanked literally everybody in the community, but he cannot thank himself. And I wanted to put a big thanks out there to Armchair, and I want to encourage people to share your appreciation for the work that he does, because he is putting in a lot of hours analyzing these games, getting data, picking topics for this podcast, helping with data on the other podcast. Like the dude is putting in some hours, and it is awesome.
Armchair, well, I appreciate you, and I want to say thank you while we're here.
Thank you. Thank you. I mean, to be fair, it's kind of gauche to give appreciation to yourself on the air, if I feel like. So it's,
yeah, I know.
There's that.
I know. You keep thanking people, and I get the underlying message here is, God damn it, why won't someone thank me?
Yes, I've been compliment fishing this whole time.
I was driving the other day, and I was like, hold on.
There's a light bulb go off in the middle of the highway.
That's yeah. Great. Yeah.
You know what though, when people are like talking about game and meta and stuff like that. And somebody pings me and says, "Hey, do you have any data about this?" That's appreciation. That's how I feel the appreciation is. Like, oh, you know what? all this stupid work I'm doing is useful to somebody. So, you know, even if you haven't said it or pinged me or whatever, I do appreciate it. I mean, I kind of do it for fun. And also, like I said, I'm a completionist. So once I started, I can't really stop.
Would you say that one of your love languages was acts of service?
Yes.
Be honest, this is for posterity.
Yes, I would. Yeah. Actually,
there you go.
That's quite accurate. Yeah.
Yeah. Armchair likes doing things for other people.
I really do. And sometimes I have trouble doing things for myself.
This is going great. Look at the time that we have spent with no plan. I told you we didn't need a plan.
I know, Stu,
I got another question for you. It's more about the podcast. I wonder if you've got any ideas for things that you would do with this podcast next year.
Oh, the only thing I can think of would be a special, I don't know if it's a special edition or if it's just one of your midweek episodes where you talk in great detail about one game in particular. Like we're talking beat for beat, move for move, like your radio guys at a basketball game or something.
Play by play, right?
Yeah. To and with insights on why things went well or didn't go well. Ideally, that's a game that you also have a log file or a video or YouTube video of, so that players can listen to your podcast and look at the game at the same time. That's something I've wanted, not just battle reports, but battle reports with evaluative explanations and strategy tips. And I think you guys would be really well equipped to pull that off, especially in a tournament like this with a lot of high profile games.
I think that's a fascinating idea. And you know what I like best about it is it dovetails with another idea that I had that Armchair was trying to shoot down. I was thinking that we should do 2 episodes a week during the pods.
What did I tell you was my maximum?
You said maximum of 2. So if I get your other podcast to go on hiatus, then you can do 2 of these. And my thought was that if we did, like, because one of the problems, I just said it, like, Armchair is putting in a lot of work coming up with topics and thinking of things to talk about. And he's like, I don't think I could do 2 meaty topics a week. And I said, well, let's not do 2 meaty topics a week then. Let's have 1 midweek episode where we just talk about what happened and then move on. Maybe it's 20 minutes. And I like that because I felt like the pod phase was where, for me, the most exciting stuff happens. But it happens, like, when we're doing these once a week podcasts, it feels like it goes by too quickly and there's not enough time to sort of analyze and assess it and kind of discuss what's going on. But if we had a midweek episode, we get someone on to do a beat for beat topic of one of their games. And we have a quicker recap of what happened.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in the pod phase, especially now that we're up to 20 something pods. So, it's hard to squeeze all that in. You're right. I don't know. Maybe that's something to think about. I'd kind of been thinking about doing something like more along the lines of what Stu was talking, was like a play by play analysis kind of thing. But like with like video, I remember the first year I played in the World Cup, Green Knight did some stuff like that on his channel. I felt so chuffed because I was like, he had our game on one of his things where he was talking about everything I did wrong. I'm like, oh, that's what I did wrong. I did that. it was my first brush was internet, stardom. But yeah, I think I like Stu's your suggestion, because I feel like there's a place or a market, a need for content that speaks more to, what do you want to call it, player development, maybe. I think a lot of times, and I think, you know, we do a lot of this on the other podcast, you know, we kind of talk about what's going on and here's the you know, what's doing well and here's why it's doing well and, you know, some crunchy stuff around that. But we there's not a lot of content focused on, hey, guy, here's how you deploy your squadrons because X, Y, Z, and here's why you make this choice here, not that choice there. And you know, I know there's a couple of games in my pod where I was like, you know, I need to make an instructional video using this game because this is where I screwed up, like right, put my finger on it here. So,
yeah. And I think that one of the reasons people have given in the past about why they don't do that kind of content is because it's hard to do in general. It's more of a heuristic based sort of idea. So if you do what Stu says and you just pick a game, you're no longer doing a generalized instructional video. You're doing these two fleets, this objective, this is what the people have chosen. How do you set this up? And if you do enough of that, you can teach people the heuristics that go on behind the scenes in their brains that lead them to make the decisions they make.
Right.
Really? Yeah. You hit the nail right on the head. That's exactly what I'm thinking of.
Right, let's do it.
Okay. Whoa. We are not making any promises. We are not making any commitments. We will take this under advisement and we'll see what happens next Vassal World Cup.
Do it.
but maybe.
All right, guys. Anything else on your mind for tonight?
I don't think so. I think it was a good chat. I'm glad you were able to come back on, Stu, and kind of go through some of the stuff that you've been dealing with. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how that last game goes and being able to crown a champion and hopefully being able to talk to them next week. You know, the World Cup is what I look forward to every year. It's kind of it's definitely the cheapest tournament I go to because I don't have to travel for it, but it's definitely the sort of the thing that is, you know, I think for a lot of people, you have Worlds in your head and that's kind of the pin in your calendar for your season. But my pin is at the World Cup. So I'm happy to take part and I'm happy to be able to do this podcast. And I'm just happy and a little tired. So
and sick.
Really happy and sick. Yeah. I'm just sick and happy. It's great.
All right. Well then let's say good night. Thanks a ton for coming on to the podcast. I gave Stu like 8 hours notice. Usually we give people like a week or two. So thanks for being available for us.
Happy to be here. Thank you guys.
Awesome. Well then we'll catch you all next week when we know who the winner was. May the force be with you.
Always.
Thanks for listening to the Food and Beat Show. If you have any feedback, feel free to reach out by email or Discord. Listen again next week for more Vassal World Cup commentary.